Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Frankie.
And I'm Tyler Clausen. In today's episode, we hear from the Reverend Chuck Curry, chaplain and religion professor at Pacific University, as well as a great admirer of the Dr. Martin Luther King, whose legacy we remember today.
And we jump back into our continuing history series on Canby's founding families. We'll bring you the remarkable story of Edward Canby, the little-known Civil War general the entire town is named after. But first, the news. A 42-year-old man killed four family members, including his infant daughter, at his home on South Barlow Road between Canby and Woodburn, Clackamas County deputies reported early Sunday morning. The suspect, who was attempting to murder an 8-year-old girl when deputies arrived on the scene, was also killed. The suspect was identified as Mark Leo Gregory Gago, 42, of Woodburn. The victims were later identified as his infant daughter, girlfriend, mother, and stepfather, according to the Oregonian. He was attempting to kill a young girl, reportedly his girlfriend's daughter, when deputies saved her life by the use of lethal force. State leaders would later praise deputies for their courage and quick actions that prevented further loss of life. The victims of the quadruple murder were Olivia Lynn Rose Gago, 9 months old, Shayna E. Schweitzer, 31, Jerry William Bremer, 66, and Pamela Denise Bremer, 64. All were residents of the same house near Woodburn. Clackamas County PIO Brian Jensen said that the victims were not shot. "We're not sure what was used at this time," he said. "I've been told that there were numerous weapons, swords, things of that nature, in the residence. Police are used to seeing brutal crimes, but this was something else. I cannot explain how horrific it is," Jensen said. Two family members, the young girl and an adult woman, survived the attack and were taken to a nearby hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. No deputies were injured. Barlow Road was closed Sunday morning while law enforcement continued their investigation, but was since reopened to traffic.
Dear God, thank you so much for this evening. Thank you for our leaders that are up here on the dais this evening. I ask for wisdom and guidance, and I ask for calm and peace. Thank you so much for this great community that we have. Guide us through our deliberations this evening, and I ask these things in your name. Amen.
So prayer, is it strictly personal, or can it be a public thing? And should it be open to other faiths, or can the mayor who sets the agenda for meetings decide who prays and who doesn't? These are questions that unexpectedly emerged at last week's Canby Council meeting for the city after Rajan Zed, a Hindu cleric and globally recognized leader in interfaith relations from Nevada, approached Mayor Brian Hudson to give the invocation. The invocation was once reserved at Canby City Council meetings for a simple moment of silence, but in 2015, Mayor Hudson replaced it with a Judeo-Christian style prayer for guidance and wisdom, which he has typically delivered himself, occasionally calling on Council President Tim Dale to do so in his absence. On Wednesday night, Hudson admitted that he had declined requests to open the invocation up to the other community members, including local clergy, believing it serves an important function to the council and to him personally.
I believe in prayer. I believe in that aspect of it. I believe we as leaders need that piece.
Rajad Zed, an immigrant from India, an American citizen, is known for delivering the first Hindu prayer in the United States Senate in 2007. Since then, Zed has served as a guest chaplain and delivered invocations at the legislative houses in at least 10 states, including Oregon, and city councils across the country. When Zed first approached the mayor about serving in this capacity in Canby, Hudson said he consulted with two other counselors and city staff and did his own research on Zed's background. He ultimately declined Zed's request, but did offer the opportunity to deliver his prayer during the time set up for public comment. After continued conversation with staff and council members with his own reflection, Hudson reconsidered and emailed Zed and said that he would be welcome to share the invocation. But it was the same day as the city council meeting, and no one knew if the Hindu cleric would be able to make it on such short notice. Zed walked through the doors after the meeting had begun, coincidentally during the mayor's own prayer, and was invited to take the podium. He recited lines of ancient Sanskrit from the Hindu holy books Raj Vedya, Upanishads, Bhagavad Gita, I hope I did a good job, followed by their English translations. Later, Counselor Sarah Spoon read from a prepared statement in which she shared some of Zed's background. She also expressed her support in the invocation, but questioned the constitutionality of the city's practice of excluding other faiths from participating.
We very nearly wasted a unique opportunity to welcome a world-renowned religious leader. If our commitment to inclusion, the Constitution, and diversity is real, it should not have been difficult for your representatives to allow this man to come and give invocation for us. I support the existence of our official invocation, but outright object to the exclusion of other faiths to issue the official invocation at our city council meetings.
She concluded by saying she appreciated the mayor's desire to center himself before accepting a seat of honor in the council chambers, but pointed out that this is something that could be done privately. If instead he chose to do it publicly, Spoon believes he must be willing to make the time more inclusive or risk opening the city up to constitutional challenge. In an email Saturday, Mayor Hudson further clarified his position, pointing out that he has made changes in his invocation at councilors' requests, including removing overt references to Jesus Christ. This, the invocation, is meant to be a way to offer encouragement to the council and our city, he said. I have kept it within my purview because I was afraid it would become what happened on Wednesday, and it has happened anyways, and that is the most unfortunate part of it all. The Canby Parks and Recreation Advisory Board is asking for the public to weigh in on the location of the city's new splash pad. The board has set a public meeting for 6:30 p.m. Tuesday, January 29th at the Canby City Council Chambers on Northeast 2nd Avenue to discuss the location of the water feature, which is likely to have ripple effects in the city's entire park system. Really, Frankie, that's a terrible joke. Maintenance staff and outside experts will be on hand to share information and answer questions, and light refreshments will be available. This week, the board submitted a memo to the City Council containing a list of the perceived pros and cons of placing the splash pad in one of three parks considered favorites for the amenity: Maple Street Park, Waite Park, and Legacy Park. Of the three, Maple Street was considered to have the most pros, including utilities, restrooms, a covered picnic area, parking, and ample space. The board said that they also considered alternative locations, including the Canby Swim Center, Ackerman Center, the old Canby Public Library, and a site near the new library. The memo says all three locations were dropped for various reasons, but didn't elaborate further. After hearing public comment on January 29th, the board will make a recommendation to the City Council, who are responsible for the final decision. According to the memo, the Parks Board would like to see the project fast-tracked, such that the new splash pad would be in use as early as this summer, if possible. Clackamas County will have a new chief executive starting next month. Commissioners on Thursday appointed Gary Schmidt as the new Clackamas County Administrator following a nationwide search. Schmidt will replace Donald Krupp, who is retiring at the end of January. The County Administrator manages the employees and activities of the county by implementing the policies and goals of the Board of County Commissioners. Schmidt is presently the Director of Clackamas County Public and Government Affairs, a position he has held since 2011. Prior to that, he served for 2 years as the Public Affairs Manager. Clackamas County Chair Jim Bernard says Gary is a lifelong resident of the Clackamas County and brings a wealth of internal experience and knowledge about our county. He is well positioned to continue the incredible progress we have made over the past several years. In accepting the position, Schmidt said that he was grateful and honored, adding, "I look forward to continuing the outstanding service of County Administrator Don Krupp. Working together with the public, commissioners, and county staff, we will continue to build and enhance public trust and serve and support this amazing community." Schmidt will begin his new role February 25th. In the interim, commissioners will work with Schmidt and Deputy Administrator Laurel Buttman following Krupp's retirement. It was a tough week for the Canby Cougars in sports. The boys basketball team competed well against Oregon City and Westland on the road, but ran out of steam for the final frames of both games. They dropped to 1-3 in league play and 6-9 overall. Good news is, they'll be at home all week, as Tualatin comes to visit on Tuesday and Lake Oswego stops by on Friday. Both games get started at 7 p.m. The girls' woes continue as they fell in hard-fought contests against Oregon City and West Lynn, extending the losing streak to 9 games after their great 4-2 start. Their next chance to get back on track will be on the road versus Tualatin Tuesday, following another road game against Lake O on Friday. The Canby Cougars swim team hosted St. Mary's for a ladies-only meet on Thursday. Canby continues to show progress and had some great swims, though St. Mary's came away with the overall win 97-73. The Canby boys swam a practice meet this week as they gear up for a big showdown against Oregon City at 4 p.m. Thursday. They'll be at home at the Canby Swim Center. Go Cougars! For some people who enjoy a well-brewed craft beverage at the end of a day, living in the Willamette Valley is like living in paradise. There are literally hundreds of craft breweries, wineries, and cider presses producing amazing stuff right here in our region. It actually can be a little overwhelming, but it's also very exciting if you have the right guide. That's why I love visiting the FOB Tap Room in Canby Place on Southwest Berg Parkway. They have over 36 taps of the absolute best craft beers, ciders, and wines, which are constantly rotating in a wide variety of styles, and their friendly staff has the expertise to recommend something you're guaranteed to love. They've got an awesome trivia night every Wednesday and other events happening all the time, so be sure to connect with them on Facebook so you don't miss out. See you at the FOB.
The Cold Within by James Patrick Kinney. Six humans trapped by happenstance in bleak and bitter cold. Each one possessed a stick of wood, or so the story's told. Their dying fire in need of logs, the first man held his back. For of the faces round the fire, he noticed one was black. The next man looking cross away saw one not of his church, and couldn't bring himself to give the fire his stick of birch. The third one set in tattered clothes, he gave his coat a hitch. Why should his log be put to use to warm the idle rich? The rich man just sat back and thought of the wealth he had in store and how to keep what he had earned from the lazy, shiftless poor. The black man's face bespoke revenge as the fire passed from his sight, for all he saw in his stick of wood was a chance to spite the white. The last man of this forlorn group did not accept for gain. Giving only to those who gave was how he played the game. Their logs held tight and death's still hands was proof of human sin. They didn't die from the cold without. They died from the cold within. So my guest today is Reverend Dr. Chuck Curry. He's a university chaplain and an assistant professor of religious studies at Pacific University. Did I get all that right, Chuck?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, excellent. Thanks for coming on the program. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for the opportunity to talk with you today.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm excited to talk to you. So we're obviously here to talk a little bit about the work and enduring legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., about whom you have written pretty extensively. You've done some blog posts about him and some things that appeared in the newspaper. It seems like his work has had quite an impact on you. Is that correct?
I think anyone who has grown up after the civil rights movement, like I have, has been impacted by Dr. King's work. I'm originally from South Carolina. Mm-hmm. My family's been there since the 1600s, and so my family's history has been tied up into the legacy of not just the American Revolution, but also the Civil War and the Civil Rights Movement.
Oh, interesting.
And I think that Dr. King has defined for my generation and others what it means to be a person of faith, and also what it means to be an American in a diverse and pluralistic society.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think so too. I, not to date you or anything, but you've said this publicly. You were actually born the year after he was assassinated. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Of course, I obviously never had the chance to interact with Martin Luther King, but I have been able to talk with other veterans of that movement, people who worked alongside him and some of his family members as well over the
years.
Oh,
really? You've been able to meet some of the King family?
I have some of his. I've met two of his children over the course of my work. And, you know, they all continue to be involved in civil rights work and ministry, and many of the veterans of the civil rights era, while a lot of them, of course, are aging, are still active and involved. And I've appreciated being able to hear their wisdom from people like Otis Moss, who worked closely with Dr. King, and Joseph Lowry, and of course Jesse Jackson, who's someone that I've worked with on a number of different issues. He attended the same seminary in Chicago that I did, and I've appreciated his leadership over the years.
That's really cool. So, Chuck, I think one thing that I wanted to ask you is it's so interesting to hear these experiences that you've had as far as where you grew up and the time in which you grew up in that area, to be able to sort of rub shoulders, if you will, with actual members of the King family and also some of these leaders from the civil rights movement, which I personally, I was born and grew up in Kentucky as well. So I have a little bit more experience with that than maybe folks out here might have, who've lived in the Pacific Northwest all their life. But we are here now, you and I both, and we're obviously much more removed from the civil rights era and from even Dr. King's life and work. He obviously continues to be relevant, but I wanted to ask you, could you kind of talk about that a little bit and give a little bit of an overview about maybe for folks who don't have that direct kind of experience or background in the civil rights movement, what sort of pieces of King's philosophy and his approach do you feel are very relevant today, wherever we live in the country? You know, obviously here in the United States, I think we should keep the discussion there. But what parts of, you know, Dr. King, his message, do you feel really need to be highlighted in today's day and era? And in this discussion, what would you like people to kind of take away from?
It's important for people to remember that while we celebrate Dr. King and his legacy today, that when he died, he was an unpopular figure in American politics.
It's easy to forget.
The majority of Americans did not appreciate his work, his ministry, and the last Gallup poll that was done on him. He had very low approval numbers. He was oftentimes called the most hated man in America, and of course, he was in fact assassinated. One of the last sermons that he gave was called "The Unfinished Agenda," and the reality is that we continue to have important, pressing civil rights issues before us today that include the entire gamut from voting rights, which continue to be under attack, not just in states like Georgia, but all across the United States. Up to economic inequality. The last campaign that he led was for workers' rights in Memphis. That's where he was assassinated, marching with janitors. And economic inequality continues to plague our nation. So does the fight for true universal health care. We certainly made progress during the Obama administration with the Affordable Care Act, but as you know and others know, that's under attack and by the White House and in Congress today. And Dr. King laid out for us an agenda a deeply moral agenda that was rooted within the Christian tradition, but that was also influenced by interfaith partners and different philosophical ideals as well, where we can in our country come together if we want in common cause to promote the common good. And I think that that's still needed. That voice of his is still needed, and it's up to all of us, regardless of our faith tradition, to continue that work and to address that unfinished agenda that he left behind so many years ago now.
But yeah, I appreciate that, because I think it is very easy to look back on that time and feel like, oh, we've come so far, you know, and in some ways we have, but that's not to say that there's not still work to be done and much ground that still needs to be covered and much place for common ground in that, you know, much, because that was part of his message as well. It's just not that, you know, I'm doing this or the people that, you know, Dr. King's supporters, you know, he's going to have them do this, but really let's come together, find what we have in common, and let's do this work together. And I think there's that's very much needed now as well.
That's an important message. We do need to find common ground. Historians tell us that we are in a period of history where the American people have not been this divided since right before the Civil War. Mm. And the more that we can find common ground with one another and not vilify each other, the better off that we all are. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we need to speak the truth, and that, you know, there are way too many examples of racism impacting our society, even though we have, as you said, made great progress that Barack Obama has often talked about, but there are still too many African Americans who are shot by the police without true justice coming out of the situation. Mm-hmm. African Americans are having their voting rights challenged by legislative means and in the courts. The Voting Rights Act is under assault today in Congress. And women still do not earn what they should be earning compared to men in comparable positions. Latinos are routinely profiled as criminals, and so are Muslims. And so, you know, we see a huge variety of issues that intersect with Dr. King's message and agenda, and it leaves a lot of work for all.
Yeah, and let's talk a little bit about, you know, folks who that hear what you're saying are like, yeah, we still got work to do. What's the best way to do that? Because I think we do have a problem with in our country right now with folks who disagree about issues and really not getting anywhere from just we disagree, you know, and just that kind of not being able to get past, you know, that disagreement. How would you advocate to someone who is not happy with the way things are right now and wants to see change? Maybe talk a little to young people, of whom of which Dr. King did a lot of talking to young people and kind of putting what he felt you know they should do to resist and to make change.
Well, certainly, in my role at Pacific University, I talk to young people every day.
Sure.
About how it is we might create a more just world. That's one of the part of the mission statement of Pacific University, to create a more just world.
Hmm.
And I encourage students to get involved in the issues that they care the most about, whether that's climate change or working on actions to support the creation of our Earth and all that lives on it, or to get involved in efforts with groups in Oregon like Lift Every Voice Oregon, which is working on specific legislative proposals to reduce gun violence in our community, or whether it's working on issues related to police accountability.
Hmm.
That are so important, or to work on issues of economic justice, raising the minimum wage and making sure that there's equity in pay between men and women. So there are plenty of places that we can plug in, whether it's through our faith institutions, whether it's through our schools and clubs, or whether it's through ballot measures or other nonpartisan activities. And I also believe, of course, very strongly that people on an individual level ought to get involved in working on political campaigns for candidates that they support. It's not my job to say which candidate or not people ought to get involved with. Mm-hmm. But I think the democratic process works better overall if all of us are involved and all of us vote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And what about for young people that, you know, I kind of mentioned that disagreement piece. Obviously, Dr. King faced tons of opposition. As you mentioned, he was not very popular overall in his day, you know, and a lot of the sort of goodwill has come more recently as the civil rights movement progressed and sort of the arc of history bent toward, vindication and folks seeing that what he was saying was very true and people waking up to that. But he obviously dealt with a lot of opposition and he had a very sort of, I think, effective way of doing that. Do you think there are things that we can learn from that?
Certainly. One of the things that we need to do is make sure that we treat those who might oppose us on policy issues or political issues the way that God said that we should treat everyone, which is with respect, to treat people as if they are our neighbor and not our enemy. We shouldn't be vilifying those who might oppose us. But disagreement should not be an excuse for stopping us from pressing forward with an agenda that reflects a more just America, mm-hmm. a more just world. And so while people may oppose the agenda of economic equality or oppose the agenda of equality for gays and lesbians or for Latinos in our country, or may oppose comprehensive immigration reform, that shouldn't stop us from working on those. And trying to advance those issues. The reality is people are always going to disagree. Hopefully, though, over time, we can conduct ourselves in a way that allows for reconciliation with each other down the road.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, Chuck, I really appreciated this. We're almost out of time here. I was hoping we could maybe leave it this way. I you are obviously very familiar with Dr. King's work. I imagine, most anyone in the United States knows of, a couple of his very well-known speeches. I Have a Dream speech, of course, and a few others. Is there any, at this time right now that you might say, if you're, something that I often do on Martin Luther King Day is I'll read some of his speeches. I imagine some other folks have a tradition like that. Is there a particular speech or something that Dr. King wrote that you might suggest on Martin Luther King Day 2019 today that folks should look up that you feel is maybe particularly relevant for our lives today?
Well, as I was contemplating issues in Syria and the discussion about the administration's desire to use military action in Iran. Mm-hmm. I was reflecting again on Dr. King's speech Beyond Vietnam that he delivered at Riverside Church in New York mm-hmm. shortly before he died, mm-hmm. where he made the link about U.S. military involvement and poverty here at home and social injustice here at home. And I think that's an important for all of us to reflect on as we consider our responsibilities to the United States and to the world.
Yeah, that's great. Well, we will post a link to that in the show notes here so folks can look that up. We'll have to go find it, but we will find it and get that to you. Chuck, this has been great. I mean, we often say our interviews are fun. This is an important conversation, I think, that we're just able to have, and we really appreciated your very knowledgeable and deep knowledge of Dr. King and just kind of the issues facing us as a country from a faith perspective as well that you're able to share. So thank you so much for doing this. Hopefully we'll have you on the show again sometime if you enjoyed it and are interested in coming back.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
All right.
Important day.
Thank you, Chuck. Happy Dr. Martin Luther King Day.
Thank you.
Are you a small business owner or maybe thinking of investing in yourself with your very own startup? Awesome! Now all you have to do is reach potential customers at a time when consumers have never been more fragmented, more distracted, or more difficult to reach. If that sounds hard, believe me, it is. That's why I make Frankie do it.
Carrie and her team at Promotional Strategies offer strategic, purposeful solutions to build your brand with lasting promotional items that make sense for you and your company. They are creative geniuses who will deliver advertisements that people actually thank you for and will use every day. We've tried other sellers, and we trust Carrie to provide high-quality branded items that we can be proud of. Find them at 695 Southeast 1st Avenue in Canby or online at ps266swag.com.
Canby Then is brought to you by Retro Revival. They're not your average antique shop. They're open daily. You can find them on the corner of Northwest 3rd and Grant in downtown Canby. We have much more to tell you about the Lee family, but first comes a story of how Canby got its name. You may remember from our earlier episodes in this series that Canby was originally known as Baker Prairie, probably named after James Baker, who settled north of town in 1838. Although it might also have been Micaiah Baker, a 19th century trapper whom little else is known. The name Baker Prairie can still be found around town, such as the old Pioneer Cemetery on Knightsbridge Road, or the much newer Middle School, which was given the name as a nod to the area's history. So where did the name Canby come from? Believe it or not, it was named after a man who never lived here. He never even set foot here in the town, as far as anyone else knows. In the U.S. Army, General Edward Richard Sprigg Canby was well known in his day, a Union hero in the Civil War who led the defeat of General Sibley during the Battle of Glorieta Pass. This decisive battle in March of 1862 is known by some as the Gettysburg of the West and marked the end of the Confederacy's attempted invasion of California. Canby later accepted the surrenders of General Dick Taylor and General Edmund Kirby Smith in Mobile, Alabama. Ulysses S. Grant, Union Commanding General and future President of the United States, had much to say about Canby. He considered him more skilled in the matters of administration than actual soldiering, and criticized him at times for not being aggressive enough. Grant later wrote, "There have been in the Army very few, if any, officers who took as much interest in reading and digesting every act of Congress and every regulation of the government for the Army as he has. His knowledge gained in this way made him most valuable as a staff officer." In other words, he was what might be referred to today as a policy wonk, someone with a rich aptitude for technical details and strategy, but a weakness for practical applications and dealing with people directly. Following the war, Canby, whose father had owned slaves, was estranged from some of the relatives who he had fought during the Confederacy, when he refused to grant them favors as a military governor during Reconstruction. Canby was often stationed in some of the most volatile regions in the convalescent nation, including Louisiana, Texas, Virginia, and South Carolina. Clashes were more common between whites and blacks, Republicans and Democrats, imagine that, and federal and state governments, and Canby was always in the center. His tendency to rigidly uphold law, order, and just principles, while grudgingly were admired by many, often made him, quote, the bad guy in times of conflict, and he was prone to alienating one side or the other. In August 1870, Canby was assigned to the Pacific Northwest, and this is where his story aligns with that of our town. As we mentioned, Canby most likely never set foot here at any time during his life, but someone who definitely did was a good friend and confidant, Ben Holliday. Blunt, gruff, and enterprising, Holliday was a speculator who had managed to get himself appointed president of the O&C Railroad that was being built through the heart of the town. Holliday had a lot of pull at the time, and though the exact details will never be known, it's generally assumed that the well-known rogue pulled the strings necessary to have the towns named in the honor of his dear friend. What we do know is that when the community's first plat was filled in 1870, it bore the name Canby and not Baker Prairie. you'd think that the gesture would have been enough to at least have the guy come here once or twice, but whatever, I guess it's not good enough for you. Truth was, Camby had his hands full in his new post in Oregon. He was soon embroiled in a feud involving the Modoc people, who had been forced to share a reservation in Oregon with their traditional enemies, the Klamath. When the U.S. government refused to allow the Modoc to return to their native home in Northern California, the tribe left anyway, sparking the Modoc War. The Modoc entrenched themselves in the lava bed near Tule Lake in extreme Northern California, where the terrain offered numerous advantages to the defenders. The place became known as Captain Jack's Stronghold, named after the Modoc chief. The Modoc had the stronghold for months. Their band of only 53 warriors, holding off army forces numbering as much as 10 times that. By the time General Camby arrived on the scene, the government was interested in talking peace. But in the tense environment, the Modoc got the wrong message. Captain Jack received word through his spies that the general intended to capture him, his warriors, and put them to death without a trial, something that Camby would have never allowed. The peace parlay was set for April 11, 1873. General Camby agreed, although he had been warned that the Modoc were volatile and he would be in danger. He reportedly said, "I believe that you are right, but it would not be very well for the general in command to be afraid to go where the peace commissioners would venture." For their part, the Modoc were plotting to kill Camby and the rest of his party, under the belief that peace was not possible. They were determined to fight until we die. Captain Jack himself was reluctant to agree to the ambush, believing it to be coward's work. He wanted to give the general one last chance to give them a home in their own country. Surely, having no idea of what was at stake, General Camby refused, on the grounds that he did not have the authority to grant such a request. It was then that the Modoc attacked. Camby was killed by Captain Jack and one of his lieutenants named Ellensman. He was shot twice in the head, and his throat was cut. Camby was the only general to be killed during the Indian Wars. In the aftermath, a reinforced contingent of over 600 army soldiers stormed Captain Jack's stronghold and forced a splintered retreat. Captain Jack and three of his lieutenants were captured in June. They were convicted of war crimes for the murder of General Camby and Reverend Eleazar Thomas at the Peace Commission meeting, and they were hanged on October 3, 1873 at Fort Klamath. We have much more to tell you about Camby's founding families, but it will have to wait until next time on Camby Then.
Hey, Tyler.
Hey, Tyler. Frankie.
You always mess that up.
I do.
Happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day, buddy.
Thanks. I'm so excited.
I know.
Can you tell?
Yeah.
I have to work today.
Right? Yeah, I don't have to work. So, a little bit of news.
Ooh, some news.
For the show. We are over 10,000 downloads. What are you doing?
I'm turning you down.
Oh, am I too loud? Well, I was really excited.
I know
you. And you had no reaction.
Say it again.
We're over 10,000 downloads.
Woo! I just need, because I was going to woo. That's why I was looking at my levels, okay. And then I saw that you were
this
really loud.
This is fascinating audio, I'm sure, for the listeners.
Our production nerds are going to be so excited.
We're right actually now over 11,000 at this point.
Really?
That happened last week. Yeah.
Nice.
So,
thank you.
That is
thank
amazing.
Thank you, Dr. King, for helping us get to 11,000.
Oh, wow.
I have to be thankful, right?
I guess. That's a different holiday. But thank you to the listeners. Obviously, that is amazing. We're so excited.
Yeah.
And it's all thanks to you guys. We really appreciate your support. So we are going to give back. We're going to do a contest in celebration of our 10,000 downloads.
This is news to me.
Yeah. No, it's not. Okay. So here's how it works. All you have to do to enter is to do what we're always asking for, is either recommend us on Facebook.
Please.
Or do a review on iTunes.
Please, God, yes.
And if you already have, then you're already entered. So don't worry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you want to do it again, you won't be double entered, but you will make us feel better.
Right. There's no reason to do it again if you've already done it. If you've already done it, you're good. Thank you.
Yeah.
But if you do want to enter, that's all you have to do. 5-star review on iTunes, please. or a recommendation on Facebook, and you will get some really cool Can Be Now podcast merchandise.
We're some thinking swag.
Like, yeah, some swag, like either a sweatshirt or a t-shirt. Probably some. Well, we'll reveal the whole package later, but it'll be quite the package. It'll be some really good stuff.
Yeah,
and we'll draw from that. So here's the only thing: if it is iTunes, then you need to like either take a screenshot or just email us and tell us who you are.
We don't see.
We may not. Well, we may see it if we check it, but we won't know who you are probably.
Right.
Or how to give you your gift if you do win. So just email us at info@canbenowpod.com or Tyler.
Or Tyler at canbenowpod if you want to show me some love.
And just, like I said, you take a screenshot or just be like, hey, I was whatever. Just so we know who
yeah,
to.
That'd be great.
Because on Facebook, we can probably get you just from Facebook Messenger. But
it's actually extremely exciting. I'm not trying to take away.
It's incredibly exciting.
We sat down at the beginning of this year, which was what? 3 weeks ago,
yeah,
we sat down at the beginning of the year and we said, you know, we set some goals for ourselves, and one of them was trying to watch and see how quickly we can get to 10,000 downloads total. And the fact that we hit it within the first month of the year,
I did not expect, yeah,
not at all. Yeah. It's so huge, and we're seeing such a huge increase in our numbers and our listeners, and so it validates what we're doing. It validates all the time we're putting into it. You guys are seriously making this project so much better by just showing up and yeah. listening, and you really have so much power to help us by writing those reviews and comments and things.
Well, that's the thing. Like, you know, I still meet people that are like, oh, so what do you do? Like, you know, there's still like, as much as our audience is growing and we're obviously, you know, getting yeah. more listeners and stuff and hearing from people all the time how much they appreciate it, there's still a lot of people that are just finding out about it. And if they, you know, do either stumble across our Facebook page or hear about our name and check it out and see these positive reviews from you guys, people that they know, that's all the more reason.
Difference.
Yeah, a huge difference that they yeah. would actually check it out. So, yeah, please do that, and you might win some really sweet swag.
Right.
So, move on to our next segment. Would you like to open us with a bit of prayer? Is that too much?
It's a little much. It's a little much for our podcast.
Yeah. So there was a little bit of discussion this week.
Yeah.
You read the story at the top of the, so we won't rehash the details because you guys all heard it at the top of the show. But yeah, there was some discussion around the mayor's invocation and somebody.
Which I pronounced it. Invocation. I hit that O hard on there.
Invocation.
Yeah.
yeah.
Which I was listening to the clips and other people, but I stuck with my invocation. Like yeah. invocation.
Invocation.
That's, yeah.
As if it were just, like, you know, somebody's job, like vocation.
Invocation. Yeah. No, but I just so you guys know, I hit it hard. I know I hit it hard.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's not like all those times where I get all of your names wrong.
Wrong.
Those are all accidents.
This was a purposeful yeah. mispronunciation. So there's someone from outside the community,
yeah.
a Hindu, a world-renowned Hindu cleric and interfaith leader who asked to give the invocation.
Yeah.
Or invocation, as Tyler would say, and no one else would say.
Nobody.
yeah, the mayor at first said no, that you know, it's kind of his thing, not as like a, and you know, we'll talk about that, but I don't think the mayor is like sort of like selfishly, like, I hope that doesn't come through that he's like, no, I this is my thing, you know. I think that he is just when he does it, he knows exactly what he wants it to be, you know. And
yeah.
when you're in that kind of space of religion and government, yeah. there's a lot of pitfalls.
Yeah.
And I think he just feels that
he can navigate those.
He can navigate it better.
So now,
and he can, when he opens it up, there's more risk that it goes into a space that it shouldn't be.
Right.
I feel
we didn't necessarily hit on his side of stuff in our story too much. We had the one thing that the clip and stuff, but now, do you know offhand, like, what he specifically wants out of it? You know, what's that navigation look like for him?
Mm-hmm. So I think that it's something that is important to him personally. Like it helps him approach city business in the right way. Like he says, he said several times during the meeting and in the clip as well, that it's there's an aspect of it centering himself.
Right.
You know, and I think what he means by that is sort of bringing a certain humility.
Yeah.
To the way he approaches the work, to where he's basically saying, like, you know, we need help, we need guidance, there's, you know, something larger at work here that we believe we need to call down help from.
Right.
You know, and so I kind of appreciate that piece, that he's approaching it with that humility.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is for him. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I can see where that comes from. It's really interesting. It's a really interesting topic to talk about, and it's super interesting that it's come to our small town.
Mm-hmm. For Raj and Zed to come to our town, you know. As far as I know, I don't know that he's done any other city councils in Oregon. He has given the invocation in the Oregon legislature,
right?
But
yeah.
I don't know if there are that many cities that do an invocation.
Right. And that's something that I could see just having that could be a potential problem, because, you know, that you're having someone who is doing it, but he's doing it with his own bias in it. And I'm not using bias necessarily.
You mean the stigma. Mayor?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm not using it as a stigmatic word, you know, like, oh, he's biased, but he does have his own bias and,
he has his own faith.
That moment.
He's speaking from his, a personal religious view.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ashamed about, you know.
Right.
He's open
and that's
about
totally
it.
Fine. Yeah. In fact, I encourage that. That's great. But at the same time, you know, not everybody in that room is going to share the same beliefs or might actually be alienated by the beliefs that he has. And then to have that time where he can publicly do that, you know, to have that prayer time. It's hard to see, to say you shouldn't do that, but at a government meeting, you know, I don't know if that's necessarily the place.
Well, let's bring Counselor Spoon into this. She's,
sure.
You know,
by the way, real quick, I just want to point out, I'm not against it. I'm not attacking it in any way. Just so for our listeners to know, I don't want my email to turn into that.
You might actually get some email.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
I'm glad you bring that point up, because I think in our polarized society today, like everything's black and white. Somebody has to be right, and somebody has to be wrong. And I think this story is interesting because I really think that neither quote unquote side is wrong.
Sure.
You know, I think they're just different.
Yeah.
I don't think the mayor is wrong to freely exercise his faith. That's 100%. Protected.
Yeah.
You know,
as well, someone like myself, who I would probably be closer to the mayor's belief system than a lot of other ones. I would be like, yeah, you should do it.
Yeah.
As a Christian, I'd be like, yeah, you should do that. You know, but then as, you know, someone who watches government forums, it's like, that's not the place for it. So it's a really weird place for me to be. I have a foot in both sides.
Yeah. Yeah. So Counselor Spoon's position, and I just want to say as well, like, and maybe this makes it easier for me to kind of see both sides. Like, I think we both know Brian and Sarah on a more personal level as well as a professional level.
Yeah.
But more Sarah, I think.
Sure.
Like, we love Sarah. We think she's awesome. I hate that she's had to kind of put herself out there through this, and she's gotten some kind of nasty emails,
sure,
unfortunately,
yeah,
from people in the community, which I think is not cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because Sarah is not saying that the mayor shouldn't pray. Sarah is not saying that she doesn't want the invocation.
Right.
She's specifically saying that she likes the invocation and thinks it should stay. Her fear is because of the First Amendment and the Establishment Clause, which prohibits the government from favoring one religion over another.
Yeah.
That if the mayor does do the invocation and does not allow other face or other voices to participate in that when they request. If he denies that,
right,
then it becomes a constitutional issue where someone can file a complaint, and that's going to go away.
Right.
I agree with her on that. I'm not a lawyer, but I think that the constitutional issues with that seem pretty clear,
sure,
to me. That a public official can't give an invocation from a Judeo-Christian perspective and not allow
and deny.
Yeah, and yeah, not allow other faiths to participate in that. That seems pretty clear establishment to me. That's just a non-lawyer speaking. And again, so Sarah's saying, I like the invocation. I want it to stay. The only way we can protect it is to allow it to be more open,
sure,
and inclusive.
Yeah.
So, and I also want to say, I think that Brian doing what he does is courageous as well, you know, to put himself out there with his own personal faith and to be open as he has to people saying, I don't, you know, he kind of omitted some more overt Christian type references because people asked him to.
Yeah.
You know, he's been open. He hasn't been kind of the stereotypical, like, you know, I'm right. Like, I'm just doing this because it's what I believe. You know what I mean? I think he's been open in even this situation.
Yeah.
I mean, he did change his mind and his position with Rajan Zed. And I think that he's continuing to listen and continuing to adapt. And I appreciate that about our man.
Yeah. And I think for me, the biggest problem that comes out of it is that it does become, in my mind, I exaggerate everything.
Yeah.
So in my head, I can just see it blowing up, and I see it becoming almost like a political tool of people being like, all right, well, we have to have all these different things. And so, you know, you as a Christian, you can't do what you want to do because we have to give equality and fairness to everyone, which I agree with. But then it becomes a tool for someone to either send a message in a certain way or do something that might not be on the up and up.
Yeah.
So that's why I stand on both sides, where it's like, I really like the invocation, and I really love that Brian is doing it.
Yeah.
But I can see a lot of problems with where it could go.
My ultimate hope is that the mayor would come to see that the things that he appreciates about the invocation and the reason that he brought it back, brought it into the council agenda, started it a few years ago, as far as centering himself, as far as believing in the need for our leaders to be prayed for and having that humility and having that kind of proper focus on not on themselves, you know, on their larger goals and larger principles. My hope is that he would come to see that all of those pieces stay with someone else still giving the invocation.
Sure. And
if it is someone from his faith, maybe other clergy or whatever from the community, but even if it is someone of a different faith.
Listen to the Hindu prayer that the guy did, I think everyone should listen to it because you can stigmatize it so quickly.
You can
make it sound like it's like, oh, some Hindu prayer. And it's like what he was praying was that people would be humble, that people would be wise, and that they would look for guidance when they don't know the answers. And to me, literally any religion will ask for the exact same thing.
Yeah.
So before you judge it, you should listen to it. You should take heart to what other men want out of the government officials.
I
did a little face there of like,
right,
you know, come on.
Yeah, they can't see your face.
It's not
a
visual
such
medium.
A good idea. You know what? I think we should have the audio from Roger.
Do you
Zed.
Have that?
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
So we'll close out with that. I really appreciate you saying that because, you know, he does read in a different language. And He showed up wearing clothes that are very different from what normal people in Cambie, you know, what people in Cambie normally wear. It is very easy, I think, to stigmatize and to think that this is some crazy thing that's happening. But when you do listen to his words, it's like you said, he's praying for wisdom and guidance and peace.
Yeah.
And those are the same types of things that Brian was praying for.
Yeah.
So,
Very cool.
Let's end it with Rajan Zed's words, which I want his voice to be heard in this.
Yeah.
And also talking about thoughts and prayers, like the story at the top of the show is really horrible.
Yeah.
Definitely thoughts and prayers to the family, the survivors of that horrific ordeal. And don't forget the first responders. You know, there was a lot of talk about the horrificness of the scene, and I think people forget the officers and the firefighters who have to see that. That stuff stays with them. You know, that's not a job that they can just go home and just turn off. So,
and when you read about how the officers had to report saying, you have no idea how horrific this was.
Like, they couldn't even describe it if they wanted to. Not that they would, but...
We probably make it worse in our heads. But still, like, the fact that they had... There was no way that they could describe it. Yeah. Like, that's going to haunt them.
Yeah.
And so, I woke up... That's what I woke up to, is finding out about that. Yeah. Immediately my thoughts and prayers went out to anyone involved in... It's just a sad day.
The first responders, and just that stuff goes down the line. So to the first responders and their support network, their families, their chaplains, whoever's helping them with those burdens, now they have those burdens. So prayers of healing and peace for a whole community from this horrible thing. So
I am honored to be in the city of Canby, which is a wonderful city, as I heard. Om Bhur Bhuvah Svah Tat Savitur Varenyam Bargo Devasya Dhimahi Diyo Yo Na Prachodayat. We meditate on the transcendental glory of the Deity Supreme, who is inside the heart of the earth, inside the life of the sky, and inside the soul of the heaven. May He stimulate and illuminate our minds. Asto Ma Sadgamya, Tamso Ma Jyotirgamya, Mrityor Mamratam Gamya. Lead us from the unreal to the real. Lead us from darkness to light. Lead us from death to immortality. Tasmada saktastatam karyam karma samachara asakto haya charan karma parma panoti purusha karma nevahi samsiddhi mastita jankadaya loka sangriha mevapi sampa shankar tumrahasi. Strive constantly to serve the welfare of the world. By devotion to selfless, one attains the supreme goal of life. Do your work with the welfare of others always in mind. Om Saha Navavatu, Saha Nobunaktu, Saha Viryan Karba Bahai, Tejasvi Navaditamastu, Ma Vidvisa Bahai. May we be protected together, may we be nourished together, may we work together with great vigor, may our study be enlightening, may no obstacle arise between us. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Peace, peace, peace be unto all. Om. Thank you.
And that's our show. Special thanks to our guest today, Chuck Curry. Hey, if you like what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcasting app. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episodes.
On our next show, we're very excited to be debuting a new segment, Yap at the Tap, where we sit down with Mayor Brian Hodson at the FOB Tap Room for a deep dive into some of the city's most pressing news stories and some of its tastiest beer. It's only appropriate that we'll be kicking things off with a story that's all about beer, Project Shakespeare, the massive beverage distribution facility that was recently approved by the Canby Planning Commission.
If you have a news tip, an idea for a guest we should invite on the program, or suggestions of how we can improve, please contact us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Canby Now. On our website at canbynowpod.com, or, you can always email me, Tyler, canbynowpod.com.